Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, October 4th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Business Leaders, Midland Should Invest in Itself. Four Midland leaders say strong schools are foundation of Midland's economic growth. By Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Midland faces a bright future as the epicenter of the world's most productive oil and natural gas basin. But how bright that future will be depends on Midland's willingness to invest in itself, as highlighted by four business leaders discussing the topic Monday at the Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center. Sam Sledge, Chief Executive Officer of ProPetro Services, pointed out his company is investing billions in its operations and said Midland needs to follow the example set by his company and the others represented at the panel discussion. Just as it was essential for his business to invest in equipment, technology, and acquisitions to attract and retain the best workers, it's essential for Midland to invest in itself. We want new people to come here. We want to grow the economy so we can give back and expand the economic base and improve quality of life, he said. Just like the oil and gas industry has invested in itself, we need to do the same thing with our schools and community, agreed Will Hickey, co-chief executive officer of Permian Resources. The thought that the next bust is right around the corner and will wipe everyone out and they'll go do something else is ridiculous, said Kaes Van Hoff, president and chief financial officer at Diamondback Energy. By necessity, the focus of the discussion was the upcoming $1.4 billion school bond, because, the four agreed, strong schools are the magnet that will draw other industries, including healthcare, to Midland. Hickey said that when the original company he and James Walter founded, Colgate Energy, merged with Centennial Resources to form Permian Resources, we had big plans to relocate a lot of Centennial's people from Denver. We were only able to convince 5 out of 75 to move to Midland, with Midland schools consistently the deal breaker, he said. Now, with the company acquiring Earthstone Energy, they hope to bring a number of employees from Houston, but face the same uphill battle, he said. Van Hoff agreed, telling the crowd that Diamondback has lost a number of good employees who said it was the best jobs of their lives, but they could no longer remain in Midland. We should be a thriving community and investing in ourselves, said Daniel Pender, Surface Land and Development Director with Pioneer Natural Resources. Make local schools strong, and other things will follow, like healthcare. Said Hickey, when I think of what the bond could mean to Permian Resources, it would be a light to the future. It would show employees funds are being invested in their future. This is our future. This is our kids' future. We need to get involved. Noting that the average age of Midland residents is 32, Sledge said those in their 30s and 40s need to get involved in seeing that Midland invests in itself to create the bright future they envision. I want this discussion to achieve two things. Open everyone's minds to the opportunities in Midland, and involvement is part of that. We won't make improvements by accident. Second, I hope everyone leaves here motivated to get involved, Sledge said. This article is entitled, Bishop Says MISDPD Will Not Miss a Beat, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Midland ISD Board President Tommy Bishop doesn't believe the district's police force will miss a beat under the leadership of Interim Chief Scott McCown. McCown takes over for Carlos Ortiz, who resigned last week because of differences with Superintendent Stephanie Howard over his handling of the police department. Bishop said this week Ortiz's departure is a personnel issue, so he is limited in what he can say, but that the district will move forward and do the right things to make sure students, staff, and faculty are in a safe environment. "I disagree that district doesn't care about safety and security," Bishop told the reporter Telegram. "Safety is not a back burner issue," Bishop said. "And some recommendations Ortiz brought up, like clear backpacks, will go through the district safety and security committee and then to the board for implementation next school year, if there is support. Sometimes it is all about timing and when you can implement something," Bishop said. About other comments, including accusations that Howard micromanaged the police department, Bishop said that is Ortiz's side, and that there are usually three sides to an issue: this side, that side, and the truth. Bishop said some things from a safety standpoint are non-negotiable. McCown brings 30 years of law enforcement experience, including 23 years within a school district police department and 8 as a lieutenant, according to the district. Having worked with Lieutenant McCown previously, and in the time he has been in the lieutenant's role, I am confident in his ability to work with the MISD Police Department, district and campus leaders, and other law enforcement agencies to ensure a safe environment for our students and staff, Howard said in a statement provided by the district. The district noted that Midland ISD and its police department must work in tandem to create the safest environment for students and employees. MISD stated it held a district leadership meeting in September, including a session focused specifically on MISD PD and campus relations. Discussions were held about ways the entities could work together and find a balance between traditional policing and policing in schools. Recently, Lieutenant McCown and our principal supervisor over secondary schools worked to make some adjustments, as the principal shared concerns with some of the changes that had been made and how they needed more support and officer presence, Midland ISD stated in a news release. The police department, as with all district departments, have to be responsive to the needs of our campuses. It takes a collaboration between administration and police to ensure the safety of our campuses. This article is entitled "Christy Craddock to Run for Re-Election" by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Railroad Commission Chairman Christy Craddock said Tuesday she plans to run for re-election next year. "I'm excited to run for a third term," she told the reporter Telegram. "There have been a lot of changes, a lot of interesting things going on in the industry." The Midland native said she sees a need for good conservative values, especially to oppose energy-related initiatives from the Biden administration. "The Railroad Commission is the most important agency in the state, overseeing 30% of the state economy," the Republican pointed out. "We need leaders who understand the industry and are committed to regulatory certainty," she said. Craddock said she hopes, if she wins a third term, to finish her efforts to modernize and upgrade the agency's information technology, and we're close. She also wants to continue making Texas a leader in energy and ensure the state's energy industry is subjected to thoughtful regulations. "We need to protect Texas families and ensure Texas is at the forefront of all that's going on, not just in the state and nation, but in the world," she said. "People need to understand how important this industry is for Texas and for the future, she said, citing supplies of Texas energy headed to Ukraine during its war with Russia, for example, and how energy has provided opportunities for billions around the world. Government doesn't create jobs. People create jobs, she said. I want to see the state continue to thrive because of oil and gas and energy. Oil and gas attorney Sarah Stogner, who ran against Railroad Commissioner Wayne Christian last year, losing the Republican nomination to him in a runoff, has announced plans to run against Craddock on the Forward Party ticket. This article is entitled, OPEC Plus Shows No Signs of Easing Oil Squeeze as Ministers Meet, by Grant Smith, Salma El Wardani, and Fiona MacDonald, Bloomberg. As OPEC Plus ministers prepare to review global oil markets, the group is showing no signs of cooling a rally that brought prices near $100 a barrel. Crude has soared more than 20% in 3 months as alliance leaders Saudi Arabia and Russia squeeze supplies while world fuel demand hits records. The surge threatens to undermine a fragile global economy, harm consumers with another inflationary spike, and derail central banks' plans to wrap up interest rate hikes. Yet, delegates from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners don't expect Wednesday's meeting of the Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee to recommend any policy changes. United Arab Emirates Energy Minister Suhail Al-Mazrui said on Monday that OPEC Plus has, quote, the right policy, unquote. High prices are bringing a windfall for Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, and his kingdom splashes out on everything, from futuristic cities and international telecommunications deals to top-flight footballers and golfers. They are also a vital source of extra revenue for President Vladimir Putin as his country wages war on Ukraine. The oil market is getting squeezed and getting squeezed hard. But there's still more tightness to come, Bob McNally, president of Rapidan Energy Group and a former White House official, told Bloomberg Television. Everything depends, really, on what Saudi Arabia does. Riyadh slashed output by 1 million barrels a day in July, deepening earlier cutbacks made in conjunction with OPEC Plus, and taking production to a 2-year low of about 9 million barrels a day. It committed to keep that limit in place until the end of the year. Russia has pledged a more modest export reduction of 300,000 barrels a day. The two OPEC Plus leaders said they will review the decision each month, but there's little expectation of any changes stemming from this week's committee meeting. Most OPEC Plus members aren't participating in the extra output cuts that have driven the price rally, meaning any adjustments undertaken by the Saudis and Russia tend to be announced in separate statements. For now, at least, the OPEC Plus kingpins have reason to keep their stranglehold on supplies in place. Brent crude, the international benchmark, rose to a 10-month high above $97 a barrel last week, but has since dropped to near $90 in London amid concerns about the strength of the global economy. Draining tanks. By restricting supplies just as consumption rebounds from the pandemic, the cutbacks are depleting oil inventories around the world at the fastest clip in years. In the U.S., storage tanks have been drained so low they may struggle to function properly. That's inflicting pain on consumers. India, a major buyer of Saudi and Russian oil, isn't comfortable with prices at these levels and anticipates some demand destruction. Pankaj Jain, Secretary of the Minister of Petroleum and Natural Gas, said at the ADIPEC Energy Conference in Abu Dhabi on Monday. the country is continually telling producing nations that crude is too costly, he said. Last month, Indonesian energy official Tutuka Ariyaji lamented the big burden of fuel costs on the world's fourth most populous country, while American air carriers, including Southwest Airlines Company and United Airlines Holdings, Inc., warned passengers to brace for higher jet fuel prices. Meanwhile, U.S. policymakers have signaled that interest rates will need to stay higher for longer to contain inflation. There could also be political peril for President Joe Biden as he prepares for next year's re-election campaign with gasoline near $4 a gallon. OPEC Plus has offered a mixed rationale for its approach, while consistently denying that it's targeting a particular price level. Secretary General Haitham Al-Gayus said in Abu Dhabi this week that he's optimistic about demand, while the UAE's Mazrui said the group's intention is to encourage investment in new supplies. Last month, Saudi Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman described the strategy as proactive amid uncertainties in China's economy. If the cartel's supply squeeze pushes prices above $100 a barrel, the conversation may turn to whether Riyadh would intervene to stop the market overshooting. Goldman Sachs Group, Inc. expects Saudi Arabia to restore supplies to prevent prices climbing far beyond $105 a barrel, in case that erodes consumption. This article is entitled Petroleum Museum Names New Executive Director by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Brian Grant has been named Executive Director of the Petroleum Museum following the retirement of Kathy Shannon. Grant has been the museum's Director of Rentals since 2020. It has been a privilege to learn and grow under Kathy's leadership during my time at the museum, said Grant in a statement. I look forward to working alongside our staff and board of directors to move the museum forward into its next chapter, while continuing to fulfill our mission to share the petroleum and energy story and its impact on our lives. Shannon joined the museum in 1995 as Director of Education and was named Executive Director in November 2004. As Director of Education, she led the museum's education focus towards science with the addition of the transportation wing, capitalizing on the scientific principles the Chaparral Cars exhibit embodies. Under her leadership, the museum opened its education hall, giving education programs a dedicated space to prosper. The Mineral Gallery was added in 2012, highlighting beautiful mineral specimens from across the globe and deepening the museum's focus on geology. In 2016, the museum celebrated its grand opening of its updated petroleum exhibits, an $18 million renovation of its East and North galleries. She was presented the President's Award from Texas Association of Museums for the project. In August 2023, the museum's STEAM Education Center opened as a state-of-the-art STEAM education facility. She has served as a leader in the museum community as well as the Permian Basin community. She has served on the board of the Texas Association of Museums and was president of the association from 2011 to 2012. Prior to that, she served on TAMEC, the Texas Association of Museums Education Committee, and on the Permian Basin Museum Association. She has continually prioritized education by serving on the Trinity School Board and collaborating with the Texas Education Agency on revising the TECS, Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, through the Texas Energy Council. It has been such a privilege and an honor to represent the Petroleum Museum for the last 28 years. I have been blessed with an amazing board and a talented staff, and together we have done great things to advocate for the industry and enhance education in our community. I know the museum faces an exciting future and will continue to grow and be an important part of our community, Shannon said in a statement. This column is called Small Bites. It is entitled Plenty to Choose From. More than 30 restaurants vending Taste of the Permian Basin, by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. The 38th annual Taste of the Permian Basin takes place Thursday evening inside the Horseshoe Pavilion. Hosted by the Permian Basin Restaurant Association, a chapter of the Texas Restaurant Association, Taste of the Permian Basin stands as a way for the community to not only enjoy plate after plate of delicious food, but also a way for PBRA to educate attendees on school culinary programs. We're excited that we've been able to promote our student chefs. Legacy, Midland High, ECISD, and Odessa College each have culinary programs. So the money we raise will go back to student chef scholarships, PBRA President Jerry Morales explained. But we've also realized that we have to think outside of those who just want to be bakers and cooks. There's those that are restaurant architects, designers, restaurant lawyers, public relations. The industry has gotten so big and strong that all of these different areas can financially do well. During the show, culinary students and instructors will demonstrate their cooking, baking, sanitation, and health skills. Silent auctions will also take place as well. More than 30 local restaurants will be on display, offering menu favorites, new creations, and all sorts of event specialties. Names include Fountainville, Johnny's Barbecue, Rantengo, Pachuco's, Susie's South 40 Confections, Po Chop's Munchie Shack, La Margarita Mexican Food, Cork and Pig, Typical Pickle, and so many more. People in our community don't realize that we have such a strong culinary curriculum, so it's exciting to be able to talk about that in front of the guests about what they do and how far they can go, Morales said. VIP tables are still available for purchase by visiting tastethebasin.com/admission. General admission tickets, $40, can also be bought as well. At the door, prices will be higher. The event runs from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Thursday, with a preview party for sponsors, still available, from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. 2514 Arena Trail. This article is entitled, Rain Floods Downtown Midland, Canceling Events Across the City, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. A late afternoon storm flooded downtown Midland, canceled events across the city, and rumbled through the eastern Permian Basin. While the National Weather Service showed little rain at Midland International Airport, 0.06 inch, the storm dumped enough water to flood downtown streets and drench central to eastern Midland. The storm later created flooding issues in areas like Big Spring, where 0.57 inch fell in less than 2 hours. Because of the weather, the Midland Chamber of Commerce canceled its annual meeting at the Bush Convention Center, and the Midland Police Department canceled National Night Out events. The National Weather Service had called for a severe thunderstorm watch and asked Permian Basin residents to be prepared for flash flooding, hail up to the size of ping pong balls, and damaging wind gusts up to 70 miles per hour. The NWS is calling for scattered showers and thunderstorms on Wednesday. Some storms could be severe, with large hail and damaging winds, the NWS reported. The Weather Service also calls for a 50% chance of showers during the day and 40% at night. This article is entitled, Texas Grid Solicits Power Reserves to Avoid Winter Risk, by Noreen S. Malik, Bloomberg. The Texas grid operator is working to secure an extra 3,000 megawatts of power reserves this winter to avoid an, quote, unacceptable, unquote, risk of an emergency in extreme conditions. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas estimates that there is an almost 20% probability that the state grid it manages will enter into an Energy Emergency Alert, or EEA, if there is a repeat of last year's December storm, ERCOT said in a notice Monday. Procuring 3,000 megawatts will cut that probability to less than 10%. ERCOT is not projecting energy emergency conditions this winter season, but we want to be prepared and ensure all available tools are readily available if needed, Pablo Vegas, chief executive officer of the grid, said in a separate statement. The Texas grid's push to solicit seasonal power capacity is unprecedented in a region that has long relied on market forces to procure supplies and spare reserves. Texas electricity consumption is growing faster than any other grid in the country, and demand can no longer be met with traditional sources of energy. While wind and solar have been a boon, the renewable sources are inherently intermittent. Efforts to secure backup reserves may lead to higher costs for consumers. When ERCOT ran the same analysis ahead of last winter, the probability was 7%. ERCOT Chief Operating Officer Woody Rickerson said at the Gulf Coast Power Association conference in Austin Tuesday, "We feel like that 20% probability is just not acceptable. It's too high," he added. Just because ERCOT is asking for the additional reserves, that supply may not all be available, or it may be too expensive, Rickerson said. This will educate us as to what the market is capable of providing, he noted. The highest risk hour for supply shortages this winter is from 7 to 8 a.m. local time, according to the notice. Eligible resources that may place bids include providers of demand response, where consumers are paid to curtail energy usage, along with about 2,100 megawatts of older plants that were mothballed in recent years. Some new dispatchable generation projects, which can turn on when ordered by the grid, may be accelerated to come online faster, ERCOT said. The largest plants on ERCOT's mothball list are the 840-megawatt J.T. Dealey coal-fired plant that CPS Energy had closed in 2018, and a 292-megawatt unit at Talen Energy Corporation's Barney Davis natural gas-fired plant that is slated to be shut December 1st. ERCOT will announce awards for this three-month contract starting in December on November 23rd. This article is entitled, U.S. Senate Candidate Roland Gutierrez Speaks in Midland, by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Texas Senator Roland Gutierrez, Democrat San Antonio, who is running for the Democratic Party nomination for the U.S. Senate in 2024, came to Macarena's to talk about gun reform, health care in Texas, immigration, and more. In May of last year, Gutierrez spent weeks in Uvalde. His district encompasses the South Texas city, following the shooting at Robb Elementary School. Attended funerals of slain children, met with families, and discussed and analyzed the emergency response units during the event. According to Gutierrez, this experience drove him to run for the U.S. Senate and fix a broken state. It wasn't even at the moment on that fateful day, It was 5 years prior when this same community, Uvalde, asked its governor for $5 million to fix their radios. The same radios that didn't work in those schools, Gutierrez said. And we were spending millions and billions of dollars on Operation Lone Star, money that could have gone to go fix radios. Gutierrez is a gun owner and said gun ownership is a part of the South Texas culture. He discussed common sense gun safety solutions that he introduced at the state level. We said, let's raise its age limit so another 18-year-old doesn't buy an AR-15 like this guy, to 21 years old, because that was the same age limit to buy a handgun. But you can buy this gun at 18, Gutierrez said. He also discussed extreme risk protective orders, which he said has been implemented in Florida. Extreme risk protective orders, according to Gutierrez, takes guns from mentally ill people who have made a threat or said something concerning. He also introduced legislation to close the gun show loophole. Private sellers or gun shows that do not require background checks to purchase a firearm. Although Gutierrez said 65% of Republican voters agreed with those legislative items in three different polls during the 88th Texas legislative session, the governor and the lieutenant governor did nothing about it. While the shooting at Robb Elementary had a profound impact on Gutierrez, he also discussed his support of Medicare expansion within the state. Because COVID is over, now people need to reapply for Medicaid, Gutierrez said. Because of some ridiculous government administrative screw-up in Austin, we've dropped almost 1 million people off the Medicare rolls. Gutierrez discussed education in Texas and pointed out the fact Tier 1 school counselors are outnumbered, 650 students to one within the state. Now we're asking our teachers to be counselors. We're asking them to be nurses. We're asking our teachers to care for kids, feed kids, and clothe kids, all at a whopping $46,000 a year. That is just ridiculous. And we can and should do better, he said. Gutierrez said rural Texas is home to hospital closures, fewer mental health resources, and diminished health care. These people, Republican lawmakers, have us bamboozled because they would rather have us look at the shiny object, and right now their shiny object is immigration, Gutierrez said. Gutierrez said Democrats do not want to talk about immigration solutions, and we must. Gutierrez is the son of Mexican immigrants and is an immigration lawyer. I said, imagine a world where you took immigrants on the border and say, go back where you came from. Go apply for a job at the consulate with the Department of Labor kiosk. In my plan, in this new world, and you do a background check to go process meat in Omaha, Nebraska, or Odessa, who knows, and in 90 days you get a job. You got a background check as long as you're clear. You don't have any criminal history. You can come up. You get transported into this country, you get bussed up here, he said. Farmers and ranchers, according to Gutierrez, are dying to get additional workers. But this country's visa system is broken. We can absorb up to 30 million jobs in this country, Gutierrez said. We need to have real ideas, and we need to have people that talk to one another. And right now, what's happening in Washington, D.C., and what's happening in Austin, are people that are absolutely not talking to each other, just because all they want to do is win, and they do not care at what cost, Gutierrez said. This is the Life Tributes column. Jack Cleveland Cartwright. June 24, 1930, to September 30th, 2023. Jack Cleveland Cartwright passed away peacefully at Midland Memorial Hospital after a brief illness. He was 93. Jack Cleveland Cartwright was born on June 24, 1930, to Grover Cleveland Cartwright and Laura Thelma Cartwright. Jack was preceded in death by his parents, G.C. and Thelma Cartwright, his precious wife Barbara, his son Wade, and his siblings Richard Cartwright and Anne Hodge. He is survived by his daughters, Cynthia Motes, Tom, Karen Hodge, Don, and Claire Brock, Danny. Also surviving Jack are 9 grandchildren, 17 great-grandchildren, and 6 great-great-grandchildren. Memorials may be directed to First Methodist Church of Midland, Manor Park of Midland, Midland Memorial Hospital, or a charity of your choice. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and visitation will be at Nally Pickle and Welsh from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, October 4th. The funeral will be officiated by Melissa Schuler of First Methodist Church at 10 a.m. on Thursday, October 5th at the Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home Chapel. Daniel Carl Jones, July 3, 1945 to September 29, 2023. Daniel Carl Jones, age 78, went to be with his Lord and Savior on Saturday, September 29th at his home in Midland after a brave battle with cancer. The memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, October 7th at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home Chapel, and will also be live-streamed for those unable to attend. Gabe Nance will officiate. Danny was born July 3, 1945, in Knox City, Texas, to Stephen Decatur, S.D. Jones, and Robbie Pannell Jones. He married Jennifer Dick of Edinburgh, Scotland, on May 5, 1968, in West Monroe, Louisiana. Danny is survived by his wife of 55 years, Jennifer Jones of Midland, his daughters, Dana Nance and her husband Gabe of Blue Ridge, and Jenna Jones of Tomball, his sister Paula Adams and her husband Craig of Midland, as well as 3 grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his parents and his brother. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Heidi Olivia South, May 5, 1942 to September 27, 2023. Heidi Olivia South passed away on September 27th at the age of 81 in Bellefonte, Pennsylvania. She was born on May 5, 1942 in Whitehall, Wisconsin, to Hiram B. and Joan M. Hegg. She then came to Texas and married James R. South on March 10, 1963 in Midland. Jim passed away on February 14, 1996. Heidi moved to Pennsylvania in the summer of 2023 to be closer to her daughters and their families in Pittsburgh and Bellefonte. Heidi is survived by her daughters Jennifer South and Joni South Shelley, son-in-law Kurt Shelley and granddaughter Claire Shelley, and grandson Nicholas South. She is also survived by 4 sisters, Lynn Foss, Jerry, Joe Brown, Kristen Helgeson, Tom, and Jan Sikora, and 1 brother, Mark Hegg, Sue. She was predeceased by her parents and her husband. At her request, no funeral service will be held. Flowers and condolences may be sent to 428 East Lamb Street, Bellefonte, Pennsylvania, 16823, or donations may be made to a charity of your choice. James Chavez, July 13, 1954 to September 30, 2023. James J.C. Chavez, 69, of Midland, passed away on September 30th. He was born on July 13, 1954 in Durango, Colorado. J.C. as he was commonly known, was a beloved husband, brother, brother-in-law, son-in-law, and uncle. J.C. is survived by his loving wife, Teresa Chavez, who stood by his side throughout their journey together. He is also survived by his sisters, Agnes Quintana and Betty Chavez of Cortez, Colorado, and his brother Abe Chavez, Becky, of Modesto, California. James is also survived by his mother-in-law, Frances Fowler, and brother-in-laws Bobby Fowler, Donna, Michael Fowler, Kathy, and Lynn Fowler. J.C. was preceded in death by his parents, Abe and Mamie Chavez, his sister, Trish Coulter, his brother-in-law, Gary Quintana, and his father-in-law, Robert Fowler. A celebration of life will be held in honor of J.C. at Kessler Hall on October 15th from 12 to 6:30 p.m. This will be an opportunity for family and friends to gather and share stories, memories, and support during this difficult time. In lieu of flowers, the family kindly requests that donations be made to Hospice of Midland or Gifts of Hope Midland. Contributions to these organizations will help provide support and care to those in need, honoring J.C.'s legacy of compassion and kindness. Maria Mitzi Schmidt, September 12, 1937 to September 30, 2023. Maria Mitzi Schmidt passed away peacefully in her home during the evening of September 30th, surrounded by family, after a courageous battle with Alzheimer's. Mitzi, known to many for her pretzels and by those close to her as Omi, was born in Sudetenland on September 12, 1937, to Franz and Hermine Weiss. She and her family resettled in Leonberg, Germany, when she was a young child. While in Germany, she met her husband, Karl-Heinz Schmidt, and gave birth to her first son, Klaus. In 1962, the small family boarded a ship in Le Havre, France, and set sail for America, first settling in Shreveport, Louisiana, and soon thereafter in Midland, Texas, where she lived until her passing. Mitzi was preceded in death by her husband, Karl Heinz, and her sister, Crystal Schobel. Mitzi is survived by her son, Klaus, and his wife, Shauna, her son, Curtis, her six grandchildren, and one great-grandson. Her siblings, Franz Weiss, Charlotte Lottie Wirtz, Peter Kosch, Manfred Kosch, and Gretel Fruwacht. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, October 6th at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home in Midland. Steve Weaver, officiant. Please join the family at a reception held immediately following the service at the Ellis Rest Haven Chapel's reception hall. Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home is coordinating all arrangements. Isabel P. Cortez. Isabel P. Cortez, 84, passed away on Friday, September 29th. Viewing will be Thursday, October 5th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, October 6th, at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Betty B. Smith. Betty B. Smith, age 88, of Midland, passed away on Monday, October 2nd. Betty was born in Ardmore, Oklahoma. The family will receive friends on Thursday, October 5th, from 5 to 7 p.m., at Ellis Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held on Friday, October 6th at 12 p.m. at Downtown Church of Christ, 505 San Angelo Street. followed by interment at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for October 4th, 2023. Gardner faces felony charges after accidental gun discharge. Ector County Commissioner Mike Gardner will make a statement at 10 a.m. Monday at the Ector County Commissioner's courtroom after news broke that he is facing felony charges in Nebraska after a gun he was holding slipped and discharged, injuring his 12-year-old grandson. Gardner was officiating at a wedding near Denton, Nebraska. TV station KOLN reported Chief Deputy Ben Hochin with the Lancaster County Sheriff's Office said Gardner fired a blank shot from a revolver. Hochin said Gardner wanted to fire the shot into the air to get the attention of the wedding guests, but the gun slipped and went off, hitting the 12-year-old in the shoulder, the TV station reported. Hochin said the boy was taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. They said the blank was created with glue and black powder, and the glue is likely what injured the child, the station reported. Deputies said they seized the weapon, ammunition, and spent shell casing from Gardner. Gardner turned himself in Monday morning and was released the same day on a $10,000 bond, according to the Lancaster County Jail. Hochin told the TV station he's facing a charge of child abuse for negligently firing a firearm and causing an injury. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett said if there is a conviction, Gardner cannot serve as a commissioner anymore. Fawcett issued a statement Tuesday afternoon. The Ector County Judge's office has been made aware of an incident that took place over the weekend regarding Commissioner Mike Gardner. We are glad to hear that all parties involved are safe. At this time, we do not have any information beyond what is publicly available, and our office will continue to monitor for updates. We ask that you join me in praying for Commissioner Gardner and his family, the statement said. Fawcett said they don't know the full situation at this point. He said he and Gardner have spoken on the phone. Fawcett said he knows the incident is weighing on Gardner and their prayers are with him. My heart goes out for all of them, Fawcett said. You don't wish that upon anybody. I've seen firsthand how he is with his grandkids. They look up to him as though he is their father. It's sad all around, Fawcett said. Holy Cross student earns National Hispanic Recognition Award by Ruth Campbell, October 1, 2023. Midland Holy Cross Catholic School has its first National Hispanic Recognition Award winner, Raul Garcia. The award comes through the College Board National Recognition Program. Garcia, a 16-year-old junior, came to Holy Cross from St. John's Episcopal School in Odessa. The criteria for eligible students include a GPA of 3.5 or higher, PSAT/NMSQT, or PSAT 10 assessment scores that are within the top 10% of assessment takers in each state for each award program, or earned a score of 3 or higher or 2 or more AP exams in 9th and 10th grade, attend school in rural area or small town, or identify as African American, Black, Hispanic American / Latino, or Indigenous Native. Eligible students are invited to apply on Big Future during their sophomore or junior year and are awarded at the start of the next school year in time to share their achievements in high school as they plan for the future. At the same time, colleges and organizations using College Board Student Search Service can connect directly with awardees during the recruitment process. We are very proud of Raul. He's worked hard in the 3 years he's been with us to gain as much knowledge as he can to be our top student. He shined on that test as a 10th grader. He's a junior now, but that was a 10th grade test that he took that qualified him. We're extremely proud of him for receiving the honor and for representing Holy Cross. Head of school, Carolyn Gonzalez, said he took the PSAT last year, and she added that Garcia has put more pressure on himself to qualify this year. He'll take the SAT this year, and so, God willing, he'll qualify for the National Merit Scholarship, Gonzalez said. That's his goal, she added. His classmates and seniors are also excited because now that they see someone can do it, we'll see how many more we have, Gonzalez said. Holy Cross has 75 students this year, including 14 seniors. Garcia is in a class of 9 as a junior. There are 26 sophomores and 26 freshmen, she said. Garcia said he came to Holy Cross because he has ties there. His mother is the bookkeeper for the school, which is located at the Way Retreat Center in Midland. I was looking for where I believed I could get the best education that I could, and out of all the schools, I decided that Holy Cross had the education, especially with the dual credit courses that I could take, that would allow me to propel my educational journey even further than maybe otherwise possible, Garcia said. Holy Cross has dual credit agreements with Odessa College, Midland College, and University of Texas Permian Basin. Garcia is taking dual credit through Odessa College and is aiming for an associate degree in general studies with a STEM emphasis. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. He's choosing between the engineering or medical field or a combination of both currently. He said he had no idea he would be recognized. I didn't think that I could get recognized, nor that I would, so I was honored to receive that award, Garcia added. He said he didn't do anything special to prepare for the PSAT. He studied when he could and used study guides that you can get from Barnes & Noble. He has a little bit more time in school to study this year. Asked if he was nervous about taking the SAT, given that he was recognized the first time he took the PSAT, Garcia said he's always enjoyed testing. He likes to see how he's progressing and using the concepts that he's learned. Yes, there's pressure, and I put pressure on myself, but at the same time, it's very enjoyable, and I'd say fruitful experience for me. It allows me to have an enjoyable time, but it also allows me to do my best in my educational attempts, Garcia said. Both St. John's and Holy Cross have given him a lot of individualized attention, which has led him progress faster. Although he works hard, Garcia says he likes to keep a balance. Yes, drive is important. Yes, studying is important. But you shouldn't study to the point where you burn yourself out before you take the test. Because if you burn yourself out before you get the goal, then it leaves you unmotivated. You're not going to get the results that you want because you've burned yourself out, Garcia said. He advises his peers to study but enjoy themselves and their lives at the same time by indulging in hobbies and spending time with family and friends. It's also high school when you're taking this, so enjoy life, enjoy high school, Garcia said. He added that students shouldn't put too much pressure on themselves. He said he does that sometimes and it hinders your drive and even your energy levels. Garcia says he's a musically invested person. I've always found solace and serenity within the arts, mainly the musical arts and fine arts. The moment here at school, I'm part of the choir here, and I'm actually going to be competing regionals in about a month, he added. He also started playing guitar in elementary school, and he's a DJ for events. Garcia also is a member of the Student Council and National Honor Society. Garcia said his experience at Holy Cross has been very enjoyable, and he can tell the students and staff there are good people. When he first arrived, he said he kept more to himself, but people were very welcoming. I believe that helps the environment here at Holy Cross. Students and staff are very kind-natured and kindness-oriented, so I believe that really helped bring this kind of community and overall vitality to the school, Garcia said. He added that it was an honor to receive the National Hispanic Recognition Award. He thanked everyone in his life who has helped him so far, family, friends, and instructors, because he wouldn't have been able to do it on his own. My parents have always driven me, and they've given me the opportunity to excel in my educational journey the most out of anyone. They've sacrificed a lot for me, and they're really the ones who make sure that I can do what I want in my life. And they're kind of like my support in getting the education that I need or want for what I'm going to do in life. But I also have to thank my friends and my teachers, of course. Without my teachers, I wouldn't have been able to learn anything, Garcia said. His friends have also been an essential source in helping him de-stress and encouraging him. His teachers at St. John and Holy Cross have helped him gain the knowledge he has. He's also thankful for God for being able to really understand and having the gifts that I have been given to excel in academics. Ultimately, my goal in life is to help other people, Garcia said. Gonzalez said Garcia also has taken on an office assistant elective. He is quite an amazing young man, very gifted, very humble, and he does all of our pep rallies. He's the MC for every pep rally, so he gets everybody hyped up and excited and crazy, she added. This is Christine. I'm continuing to read Odessa American for October 1st, 2023. Master Gardeners, When to Remove a Tree by Debbie Rowland and Emmy Olmschneider. Master Gardeners. In the past weeks, we have discussed which trees grow best in West Texas and how to plant trees. Unfortunately, there are times when the wrong tree has been planted incorrectly, or has simply reached the end of its lifespan. When that happens, it's time to remove it. How do you go about that? Keep in mind that most large tree pruning and removal are not a job for the average homeowner. Both the Midland and Odessa offices of AgriLife Extension have a list of licensed arborists in our area. How do you know if a tree must go? The decision to remove a tree is not easy and can be based on a variety of reasons, including size, location, impact on other trees, tree health, and suitability for our area. In addition, there are often personal reasons such as sentimental value or family value. To decide about a tree, ask yourself these questions. Is the tree in a hazardous location or under power lines? Hazardous location could include interfering with traffic sight lines or planted too close to a structure. Generally, trees should be at least 20 feet away from any structure. Pruning, thinning, or removing large trees under power lines is a job for the professional. Be safe and always call an expert for help. Is the tree healthy? Signs of infection to look for include dead branches, soft or rotting wood, and discolored leaves. If the tree is no longer growing leaves, starts to randomly drop branches, or just seems stunted, there is a reason for this and you need to address the issue. Likewise, is UC decay or defects in the roots, as evidenced by fungi growing near the base of the tree, means there is a problem that cannot be ignored. Likewise, fungi growing in the trunk of the tree indicates internal rot, sprouts or small branches coming from the base of a tree, or a sign of stress and can indicate there is a problem. Are there dead branches? Large dead branches at the top of the tree are known as widowmakers. As the name states, they are dangerous and may fall and hit property or worse, you or your neighbors. Dead branches on the same side of a tree may result in a lopsided tree. After a major storm, evaluate how many branches are damaged. If 75% of the branches are intact, a tree will probably survive. Is there enough space for the tree to grow? Large trees should be at least 20 feet from your house. You do not want large branches overhanging your home or interfering with your activities or the growth of other trees in your yard. Is your tree suitable for our area? When I moved into my house 30 years ago, fruitless mulberry, mimosas, and Arizona ash dominated our yard. Over time, I have replaced them with native trees, including chinquapin oak, mountain mulberry, pinyon pine, and native shrubs such as Apache plume, Mexican buckeye, and agarita. All survived both winter storm Uri and the recent hot weather. If you're planning to replace a tree or shrub, check out the PBMG recommended plant list on our website. If you have questions, call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686-4700. Additional information and our blog for access to past articles is available at westtexasgardening.org. Click on resources. Nuggets, What Goes Around Comes Around by Nuggets, October 1st, 2023 by Jenny Linney. There's a saying out there on the street, what goes around comes around. Most people do not realize that is a biblical principle. The very root of the Christian doctrine is sowing and reaping, giving and receiving. God gave His Son so He could have a family. The first chapter in the Bible reveals sowing and the reproducing of their own kind. Give, and it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down, and shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For the same measure that you meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. Luke 6:38. What goes around comes around. Here it is very clear that when it comes back, it is multiplied. We plant one cotton seed, and it grows a stalk that contains possibly 100 seeds. If we give good things, we get back good things. If we give bad things, we get back bad things. What goes around comes around. Another thing it shows here, with the same measure you give, it is measured back to you. If you give money in a thimble or a teacup or a barrel, that is what is used to measure back. God loves a cheerful giver, whatever the size of the container. Also, unforgiveness, strife, hate will be returned in the portion it is given. But not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Galatians 6:7-8. Not only does this show what goes around comes around, it could be revealing why there is so much sickness in our bodies. Sowing to the flesh reaps corruption. Just maybe God is trying to tell us if we would spend more time sowing into the Spirit, we would be reaping a longer, better quality lifespan. We already know we are going to live eternally somewhere. Seeing it as a righteous thing with God to return tribulation to those who trouble you, 2 Thessalonians 1:6. Wow, we do not have to get even with those who do us wrong. God does it for us. It's a biblical principle. What goes around comes around multiplied. With good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man does, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he is bond or free. Ephesians 6:7-8. With good will, God always looks at the heart. He looks at the intent, the motive of our good deeds, if we do good deeds for any other reason than our love for him and our love for one another, it would be dead works. Whatever good thing any man does, the same shall he receive of the Lord. What do you need of the Lord today? Give it away to someone. If you need a good friend, be a good friend. If you need love, give love to someone who needs love. If you need finances, give to someone who is in worse shape than you. Do not expect to get it back from the person you give it to. Trust God to have a little time to multiply what you gave with a cheerful heart and goodwill. God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that works in us. Ephesians 3:20. What goes around comes around.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.